Okay, so my name is Jan Seppänen. I'm the founder and managing director at Peerage of Science. I'm also a scientist, although at a recent conference, a professor introduced me saying that here's Janne, he used to be the young hope of behavioral ecology, which is probably also true. So at least I used to be a scientist before I went into publishing. Earlier this year, Nature published a news piece saying, "Does it take too long to publish research?" You're all scientists, or at least know enough scientists to know the answer to this one. And it's not really news because we've been talking about this for a long time, that there is something seriously wrong between your research being ready and between people actually being able to read about it. But there was an interesting graph in that Nature paper showing the time lag from submission to acceptance in different journals, starting from 1980. And it shows that it hasn't really changed in the past 35 years. So what are we actually complaining about? It takes about 100 days to go from submission to acceptance. The thing is, of course, that especially for a young scientist, if you get exciting results from your data, then you have to first submit it to Nature, get rejected, submit it to Science, get rejected, submit to PNAS, and get rejected, and slide down the journal prestige ladder one rejection at a time until you find the top journal that will accept your paper. Nature was ridiculing this behavior in that news piece, saying that, well, it's scientists' damned own fault that it takes so long because they are engaging in journal shopping. But of course, the reality is that through to the how the academic career and funding system works, this is how we have to do it because the ladders are not going to extend forever. And that's why publishing takes about a year, a year and a half, or even longer if it's a really, really great paper. So this is the world we live in. There's an interesting Twitter account called Shit Academics Say, which you really should follow because they're rather funny. This is one of their tweets outlining what happens to scientists while they're waiting to get published. The man in the picture is, of course, Darwin. And that's rather unfair, I think, because Darwin was working back in 1858, 150 years ago. So to compare how long publishing does take back in 1858 and in 2016, is it a fair comparison? Well, let's look. Meet Alfred Russel Wallace. He was a young scientist. He had an exciting idea about how species might actually come to be. And he got some data, wrote a paper, and submitted to peer review. He sent it to a man called Charles Darwin, who felt that he might have a slight conflict of interest due to his earlier work. And then he decided to send it to peer review to two of his colleagues, Charles Lyell and Joseph Hooker, both of whom said that this is really solid science, really interesting, it should be published. And it was published. But then, how long did it take? We have to remember that young Alfred was living here in the Moluccan Islands, in somewhere in Borneo, while Charles, of course, was in his London country house. So when Wallace wrote his manuscript and sent it in February 1858, it first had to be carried on a wooden boat that is pushed along by winds across half of the planet so that it ended on Charles's desk in 18th of June on 1858. And then it was peer-reviewed, accepted, and published in a public reading in Linnaean Society on the 1st of July on 1858. Time delay from receipt to publication was 2 weeks. Compare that to a year and a half nowadays. So in 150 years, we've progressed to sending people on Moon and robots in Mars, and we've managed to make scientific publishing orders of magnitude slower. But speed is not the only problem. For me, the bigger problem is quality of peer reviewing. Resnick et al. Did a survey to a large number of scientists a while back ago asking about their experiences in peer review. And more than half of the people say that they've encountered incompetent and biased peer reviews. Of course, they only say that when they're rejected. You never hear a scientist complaining that this biased peer reviewer ignored that fatal methodological flaw in my paper, or they were incompetent enough not to notice the problems in my inference. But nonetheless, I think that is a problem. And I think it shows up in retraction notices. There is this rather nice living publication done by Neil Saunders, and this might actually be the future of scientific publishing, as a side note. Websites that are actually gathering data live and analyzing it automatically and then pushing out the results as they happen. And he's done a script that follows the retraction notices in PubMed against 100,000 articles, and something tremendous has happened in the past 10 years or so. Retraction notices per number of articles has been skyrocketing. So clearly there is something that peer review should be doing that it's not doing. And you might argue that this is just because there are so many crappy journals nowadays, but that's not really true. The number of retraction rate is much higher in Nature and Science and PNAS and other high-ranking journals. So do we need better peer review? I'd say that we certainly do. There's so many problems in the old system. The question is then, should the answer be open peer review? Open is such a nice word. It's only four letters. It's so welcoming. You can even have four letters in Finnish, avoin. People throw around that word without really saying what does it mean. Because it's not clear at all, especially in connection to peer review. Does open peer review mean that the reviews must be published? Does it mean that anyone can peer review? Do you want Laura Huhtasaari to review your evolutionary paper? Does it mean that the reviewer names are disclosed to the world or to the author? Does it mean that the peer review is open-ended so that it never ends, like F1000 research? Or does it mean that publishers are completely cut out of the whole process, which, and actually most of the other ones also, usually result in you paying for everything? These things, I think, should be mentioned when you're talking about open peer review. What are you meaning by open peer review? Is it throwing out your name? Is it publishing the peer reviews? Our approach at Peer Science rests on two foundations. First, we think that submission of a paper to peer review does not have to equal exclusive journal privileges at that point in time. Secondly, we should acknowledge that some peer reviews are excellent and some are not. So, first of all, these, have you ever paused to consider when you're submitting your paper to a journal, what are you actually giving to them? You are submitting yourself to something. So, you give the journal the exclusive right to define the schedule. They will contact you at some point telling that now you have to revise this in 2 weeks and forget about the fishing trip. You are giving them exclusive right to appoint the peer reviewers. The journal's editor decides who is going to judge your paper, and you're not going to know who those people are. This is one of the main reasons why mathematicians and physicists prefer to put their paper in ArcSci preprint server before they send it to peer review, because their work can be so easily scooped that they would never trust an anonymous peer reviewer to see it before the community has seen it. When you're submitting to journal, you're giving them the exclusive right to use the reviews. When they reject the paper, you start all over again at another journal, usually without the chance to reuse those peer reviews. And you're giving them the exclusive right to sit on your manuscripts as long as it takes for them to make up their mind. And you know it usually takes a long, long time. That 100 days I showed earlier, that's just an average. If you go to the lower impact factor journals, it's a year and a half easily. That's a lot of costly privileges. And they are not only costly in terms of time for you, they're also costly for the publishers because they have to fund this inefficient process. There's several fees that they have to pay per submission, and when they're rejecting 80% of them, most of their costs are actually from material that they're not publishing. So we also have a submission system. You can submit to Peer Review Science. What do you get with that submission button? With us, you define the schedule as an author, when the peer reviews have to be in, when your own revision has to be in, when the peer process should be ready. You, the editors who are using the system, and your peers in the system recommend peer reviewers who can join through open engagement. So there is no single authority who says that this person is the peer reviewer, this one is not. Anyone can recommend people. Except you just can't review people from your own university or your own recent co-authors, but otherwise it's open. And any member journal in our service can use those peer reviews simultaneously. So instead of a sequential slide of the journal prestige ladder, we're offering a level playing field for the journals simultaneously. And nobody sits on your manuscript. It's all free for you, because, of course, nothing is really free in the world. The publishers have to pay to use our platform. And at present, there's 67 journals in the sort of the deep end of the service, and Springer is participating with their entire portfolio of 3,000 journals in our export system. The second foundation is recognizing that peer reviews differ in quality. So recently there's been a lot of talk about offering recognition for peer reviewing work. But all of those initiatives and opinion pieces are talking about counting how many times do people do peer reviews, which is rather crazy in my opinion, because for any academic output, surely the scientific value of that work should be the thing that is measured for giving academic recognition, not just how many times you've done it. But people are talking about that universities should be setting service targets, how many times do you review per year. Elsevier has launched their own review recognition platform that is counting the number of reviews, and so on and so on. ORCID also now lists peer reviews. You can put them in your work, which is actually a good thing, but again, it misses a crucial piece of measuring the quality of your science. I think that peer reviews should be judged and scored. If somebody does a crappy work as a peer reviewer, they should be told so. If somebody does excellent work as a peer reviewer, they should be praised, they should be given recognition. So the way that we're doing is that the author can submit their work to our platform where it becomes available for the peer community. And within the time frame given by the author, anybody can engage and send in their peer reviews. And then after that deadline, the first deadline, is when the different thing happens compared to anything else. Because after that, all those peer reviewers and also other peers can come in and judge and score those peer reviews. Is the praise for the manuscript accurate and justified? Is the criticism accurate and justified? And importantly, what is the scientific contribution of this peer review in discussing the implications, the improvements, the scientific implications of the work? Those scores are immediately visible to the author and to the reviewers, to the editors who are following this process. So they can see that, okay, this is a comment that the community thinks can be safely discarded. These are comments that really should be paid attention to. Author then sends a revised manuscript, and that is then the peer review process done. Then the publishing process can start, and that also happens on our platform between the journals and the author. So on these different aspects of openness, I'm not really subscribing to any of them. In Peer Review Science, open peer review means that the peer reviews themselves are open to judgment and scoring and consequences. Feedback from your colleagues. So, what are then the impacts of this process of allowing people to judge and score each other as peer reviewers? One aspect that we could look at is how detailed and careful are the peer reviews that are written. Now, I know the average essay length in Period of Science, but I was really curious to know what do the journals think is an adequate kind of peer review. There was a really interesting article on this in Learned Publishing recently in Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, which is a rather respected journal originally founded by Kent Anderson, who is rather, another controversial figure. There's been plenty of them in publishing. But they were actually telling what their internal grading scale is for the length of the peer review text. They are saying that if there's only one or two sentences, that's a very brief review, which is, well, it's brief, but is it a review? That's another question. It's a second aspect. If it, second grade is that if the 3 to 4 sentences, they call it a succinct peer review. If there's 50 to 100 words of peer review, that's a moderate volume of comments, and anything between 200 and 500 words is a significant length of detail. I was truly shocked to see that one of the most respected medicine journals is using this kind of grading for the length of peer review. In Peer Reviewed Science, an average, a median essay is 571 words. And we have a maximum of 1,000 words when we started to get too long peer reviews, and we realized that this is no longer useful for editors if it's too long and rambling. So we're asking people to write essays that follow scientific writing standards, that are readable, have concise sentence structures, but are still within a moderate length, and always having the sections introduction, merits, critique, and discussion. That 571 words is not divided equally between the different parts of the essay. People are spending a median of 57 words to describe what is good about the manuscripts, and then about 5 times that amount of words to describe what is the problems with the manuscripts, and somewhere in between then discussing the scientific implications. I think this just shows that traditionally peer reviewers see their role as critics, as trying to find what is wrong with this manuscript, and if there's nothing wrong, then it should be published. Which, in a way, that's fine. I would just hope that maybe in the future this culture would change a little bit, that people would put more emphasis also in finding out what is valuable in this manuscript. Why should it be published? Not simply because there is nothing wrong with it, but what is actually valuable in there. Of course, the length of a text does not equal to the quality of that text, because a rambling 1,000 words is just as useless as just the two or three sentences. But when people are giving scores to each other on the essay texts, we are seeing a positive correlation on the critique section, on the length of the critique section and the score that people are giving in. It's not a very strong correlation, which I think is also a good thing, because a short, concise, succinct explanation of what is wrong is actually better than a long one. So open also means that the quality of your works has consequences outside of that little bubble, so that it's open to the world. And we want to give meaningful academic recognition for job well done. That means that all the users in Period of Science have user profiles where you can show your performance. Gabriel on the back there also, for example, has a very nice performance score. You can go and Google it right now. His profile, and many other people do. You can show it broken down by different fields. How good of a peer reviewer are you in zoology or in genetics? And then also every year we give out the reviewer prize, which is not decided by a committee, but is based quantitatively on your peer reviewer performance multiplied by the time that you've done peer reviews, but so that the weight is more on the quality so that we're squaring it. Jessica won it 2012, and then there's been Holger from Germany, Jan from Germany, Staffan from UK, and now Francesco from Germany again. So that is something that we although there's only one winner every year, but we feel that this is an important message about lifting the status of peer reviewing work as an academic activity, if it can be rewarded with a prestigious prize. We're giving a trophy and €1,000 every year. So this is, of course, not what our system looks like from the inside. This is the user interface. This happens to be an onymous process, and that word means that in this case, the authors decided upon submission that this should be a process where all the names are disclosed. Normally, we are running on a double-blind system, or actually double and a half blind, because even the editors can't see the peer reviewer names by default. They actually have to click a button to see it. But normally, our processes are double-blind, so that the authors and peer reviewers don't see each other's names, but the authors can opt to have an anonymous process where all the names are shown. And that's why I can show you the names in a moment. On the right-hand side, there is a recommending menu where anybody who can access this view can recommend a peer reviewer. They are ranked by in the performance score order, but you can also search for people. And we are also building a field-specific filter here. This work was peer-reviewed by four people, and some of you might recognize the names Robert Rickleffs and Trevor Price, who are fairly well-known evolutionary ecologists. Sampath is a young postdoc from Sri Lanka. Praveen is a young postdoc from India. And although I'm very happy to name-dropping of Rickleffs and Trevor Price, I'm even happier to show that what leveling of playing field we are providing. Because how often would Sampath and Praveen, first of all, get to be in the same panel as Robert and Trevor? How often would they get to give scores on Robert and Trevor's performance as academics? And this is something that I think is really important. In this case, all four of them wrote really excellent peer reviews, at least in each other's opinion, so all of them got high scores. Trevor seems to be the highest ranking one, and then there is Sampath and Robert. And that's really the video. In addition to the actual peer review, which you can download from here, there's also a quick color-guided table of the revision recommendations on different aspects, the question, data, methods, inference, and writing. Each of them, does it need major revision or minor revision? So instead of a single major revision, minor revision recommendation on the manuscript, we are splitting it down to different aspects. Because often the writing might be excellent, but there is really something wrong with the data, or vice versa. From an author's point of view, let's say you might be interested in conservation biology. You go to the left-hand menu and simply click that. Sends a initial correspondence to the journal. It pops up in your view in the correspondence view. But maybe you're also interested in other journals. You don't have to wait for response from conservation biology. You can also click a couple of other ones, BMC Biology, AMBIO, and they will also be there under the active correspondences. Right now it's showing no reply yet. And you can look up, what did I say to the editor? We think this manuscript would be suitable, da 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 da. It goes out to Mark Bergman in Australia, who might be going to his view, look at the manuscript, look at the peer reviews, and maybe tell you, either inviting you to submit to his journal, telling you that he's still thinking about it, waiting for further peer reviews, or telling that they're not interested. In this case, he would be replying that, okay, I'm considering it. Sends it to you, and it immediately pops up in your view, in the correspondence view. So now you're waiting for Mark's decision. You're sort of on the edge. I really need to get this published. You're wondering, does it take too long to publish research? But look and behold, all of a sudden, BMC Biology sends you an invitation to submit. And you can go and click to see what they're actually saying. You should also always carefully read what are their conditions for their publishing offer. Open access journals usually demand an APC, or they might say that you need to address these final comments or shorten it by 1,000 words. If you're happy with what they're saying in the invitation, you just click accept, and then it is in exclusive consideration of that one journal. And that is where the role of peer review science ends. The rest is between you and the journal. All in all, this takes typically 9 weeks, the whole peer review process. But as an author, you decide the deadlines. If you're submitting something just next week and you put a 3-week deadline so that the next stage then falls right on the Christmas, you'll get zero peer reviews. So I would recommend if you're submitting something right now to put the first deadline well into January. But it's your choice, not a choice done by us or the journals. So all this really then needs you. We're getting the peer reviews. We're getting journals participating. We have deals with Springer, Taylor & Francis, BMC, PLOS, but we need more manuscripts. So I would really encourage you to submit to Peer Review Science because this really works. But then I am slightly biased because it's my company. So I would like to give the floor to some other guys, other people. Who have a few words to say.
Hi, my name is Mark Bergman. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Conservation Biology. Yanni has asked me to say a few words about peer review science. I think it's a fabulous idea, and I hope you'll join with me in giving it your full support. The concept of having the reviews done externally, of being complete at the time at which you find a paper, of being able to submit a paper without a particular journal in mind and having the reviews done, they're all really excellent concepts, and I think that would help. I think that would help science advance. I look forward to joining with you, submitting your papers, and signing your papers there for your journal. Thanks very much.
Biomed Central is always happy to see new initiatives which improve the peer review process, and so I'm happy to support Peer Review Science. We have signed up 4 of our journals: BMC Biology, BMC Ecology, BMC Evolutionary Biology, and Frontiers in Zoology. As an editor for Frontiers in Zoology, I can say we've had an excellent experience. A manuscript from Peer Review Science was published in the journal just last month. Our editors have benefited from being able to view submissions to Peer Review Science that fit the scope of their journals and make offers to authors. They know that these articles have been reviewed thoroughly by trusted peers, which include many of our own editors.
Hi, I'm Tom Tregenza, and I'm an associate editor for the journal Ethology. We've been working with Peer Review Science for a couple of years. I think the reviewing system is close to breaking point. It's become incredibly inefficient, both for journals and for you guys submitting manuscripts. And Peer Review Science is a real, genuine attempt to try to deal with this, to give credit for reviewing and to create a much more efficient system that works for us as a whole community, rather than kind of dividing us into silos that are terribly inefficient. So, do submit your work to Peer Review Science, and I hope to see some of it being published in Ethology. All right, thanks.
Hello, my name is Lou Sørensen, and I'm Editor-in-Chief of AMBIO, a journal of the human environment, published by the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences. And AMBIO has been part of the Peer Review Science experience since the beginning, starting 4 years ago. We published a few articles from Peer Review Science, and I really do encourage you to submit to AMBIO via Peer Review Science. That's an excellent way of publishing with AMBIO. Thank you.
So with that, thank you, and I want some questions.
I have one. Yene.
Yes?
You didn't mention anything about the Peer Review Science journal that you can review your stamp.
Peer review system for academic publishing.
To kill that. Yes?
So what's the current status of that? Because it seems that there's no any new reviews being published there.
Yeah. So the story with Proceedings of Peer Review Science is that it still exists, but we found out that you cannot really run a journal without a dedicated journal staff. So that is something that we're still keeping alive. and hope to be able to focus more in the future. But right now it's just the three guys, me and Mikko and Janne Kotiaho, who are running this whole thing, and these guys also have day jobs. At present we don't have like a chief editor that could really work full time with Proceedings of Spiritual Science. For others, I want to briefly, what's the idea in Proceedings of Spiritual Science is that that's supposed to be a journal that only publishes commentary articles that are commenting already published science. So in a sense, it would be post-publication peer review platform, but in a formal academic way. And we would envision that often the essays written in peer review science as part of the peer review process could be the first, sort of the first draft for a Proceedings of peer review, PROCBOS articles.
How does the business logic work? Can you cover the costs?
The publishers pay to use the system.
Yeah.
So we're not profitable, nowhere close at present. But obviously, we wouldn't be doing this if it couldn't be sustainable on its own going into the future. A lot of it has to do with manuscript volume. So if we can offer the publishers enough material through the service, then they have motivation to keep paying for it. But they are already paying for it, so the business model really works.
Do you have journals inside your system which only uses peers as a peer review, so that they don't have any peer review system on their own?
Not exclusively.
Okay.
Not exclusively. So all of them are running it parallel to also to their own.
Do you have any stats that how often do journals like readily accept or say that okay, you are welcome to submit it, or just versus how often they say that they are considering or they have to be ready?
Well, that is a kind of a difficult question, because obviously it largely depends on the quality of the manuscripts. So if the manuscript is so uninteresting that it gets zero peer reviews, or if you just submit it before Christmas, it gets zero peer reviews, obviously it's not going to get any publishing offers. Best papers in our service, they've gotten three or four offers from different journals, and then the author can choose which one they want to accept. And journals differ a lot. So BMZ Evolutionary Biology is actually very active, and they're making a lot of proactive offers saying that this doesn't need any extra peer reviews to the best manuscripts. Some other journals are more reactive. They wait for you to actually click their buttons and reach out to them. But I wouldn't be able to give you kind of stats just out of the top of my head.
You have already quite a lot of publishers and journals who are working with creative science. And I was wondering, for example, so when you contact a new publisher to propose collaboration, if they refuse, what kind of argument do they give to say that they don't want to be working in this kind of framework
They never refuse. They just say that we're thinking about it, and then they continue thinking about it for years and years and years. So we have ongoing discussion, obviously, with all of the big ones. We already have Taylor and Francis and Springer, but of course we are continuously talking with Elsevier and Wiley and others too. Some of the chief editors have responded that they hate the idea of not being the sole dictators of who gets to peer review. So they want to decide who peer reviews, and they're sort of reluctant to give even a little piece of that control to others. Although we're telling them that you can continue to invite your own peer reviewers in peer review science too. We even make it very easy with the recommendation pane. And also those messages are recommendations rather than review requests. So they are positive messages to receive, because those recommendations show up in your popularity scores as a peer reviewer, even if you don't have time to do the peer review. So a lot of the challenges for us is sort of trying to change attitudes in academia. So like Mikko mentioned, it's the neophobia of things have been done in a certain way for 100 years. So that is the argument that we sometimes get.
Can we go last question? So, not less, but think about the whole reviewing process as a whole for science. There's theory of science, but are you aware of different systems or like similar to your company popping up elsewhere? Or do you think it's kind of, it's still very far off getting to a kind of open and faster review process?
Well, there's two that I know of. It's Rubrik and Axios, which are also talking about independent peer review, but they're very different from what we are doing.
Yeah.
First of all, they ask the authors to pay, and it's free for the publishers, and we think it should be the other way around. Secondly, they don't have any of these new ideas that we have about simultaneous consideration by multiple journals, and most importantly, that the peer reviewers are actually judged and scored and evaluated by others. So they're running very much a traditional peer review system that is simply outsourced to another private company.
Right.
So those two are, and I think Rubrik might be actually, I don't know how active they are, because the parent company is no longer seems to be listing them on the website. Axios is still running. They have also a different model that they are referring the papers directly to editors, rather than having this sort of platform approach that we have, that the authors and the journals can meet each other on the platform.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, change in peer review is in the air. I mean, when we started 5 years ago, I encountered a lot of people telling me that you are trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. And now, last year, and the biggest publisher meeting in Europe, there was a whole session devoted to new approaches to peer review and how it needs to change. We were a little bit ahead of the wave, but on the other hand, we've been able to sort of grow recognition, having been around for a couple of years already.
You sort of mentioned about the future that we could probably publish true data straight. Did you say something like that? Because I've thought the same idea.
Yeah.
Can you explain it a little bit?
I was just mentioning that Neil Saunders' website about retraction notices. Mm-hmm. So he did some analysis on that, but then he built this system that is daily pulls data from PubMed and analyzes that and puts it there on the sort of a living publication rather than a static publication. And this is not really related to peer review anymore, but that's something that I've thought that maybe 50 years from now, maybe not that far in the future, science would be done in a way that, let's say, I have a hypothesis and I would formulate that hypothesis into a piece of code that I then publish, which would have hookups for data. And then anybody could plug in data to that hypothesis, which would, and then there would be an analysis module, which might be developed by me or by somebody else, which would hook up to the data. And that would create the results, which would be living. So maybe after the first 3 months of data collecting, people would say, oh, that hypothesis seems to be correct. It seems to be, the trajectory is clearly going towards highly significant results. And then a year later, people realize that, okay, that wasn't the case when we got more and more data. So, I don't know, maybe in the future, science would be published in living documents rather than dead documents.
Do you think, could you imagine a system where, for example, we would have a bit, let's say, like a mix between pure science and a preprint archive server? Like, if you imagine bioarchive or archive with a platform system like you exposed here where people can review, dense reviews, and those reviews can be themselves evaluated. So basically at the end you could imagine that
on the preprint server, you could have the reviews of high quality. Those reviews could be judged, and then you could have a final green or red light in the rest of the paper. Do you think this kind of thing is actually possible? And
well, we are not the preprint server ourselves, and we are very clearly saying that also, that we don't try to become a preprint server. But we are talking with BioArchive already about collaboration so that the documents could flow between us. So that could certainly be one future. Of course, one important question then is that should we have to start charging authors for it instead? And that's not something that I would be eager to do, because as a scientist myself, I think that the money given for research should be spent on the actual research, and then the money for dissemination should come maybe from some other infrastructure systems or from the companies who are actually benefiting from it. So with that preprint server, the difficult question would then become who would pay for peer review. So I don't think authors should pay for peer review, also because there's a clear moral hazard there. If the entity who has a clear interest in getting it published is also the one who is holding the purse,